The Bite Me Podcast is brought to you this week and every week by Fishing Tackle Unlimited. We shop there. They have everything you need for fishing in every way possible. Inshore, offshore, gear, all of it. Fishing Tackle Unlimited or fishingtackleunlimited.com.
Born in Waco, Texas, Balcones Distilling is where a centuries-old tradition meets the intentional and innovative craft of whiskey making. Since opening in 2008, they've been committed to creating unique and expressive whiskeys that can only be made in Texas. Their products go beyond your standard sipping whiskey, using two yeasts and a longer fermentation in densely packed oak barrels, all intentionally and methodically done to extract more nuanced flavors. It's the Balcones way, backed by a team who's committed to creating expansive, expressive whiskey with its original stamp every day. Experience the bold, unforgettable taste of Balcones. Discover the exciting flavors of its award-winning lineup of American single malts or the classic Baby Blue straight corn whiskey. Or get your hands on one of its special release bottles, released seasonally. Visit BalconesDistilling.com to check out their entire whiskey lineup. Balcones Whiskey, distilled to appreciate. Distilled and bottled by Balcones Distilling, Waco, Texas. Please drink responsibly.
You found it. This is the Bite Me Podcast. John Lopez, Captain Scott Knoll, Captain Caleb McCumber. The usual gang is here. And as I mentioned, the Bite Me Podcast is here for you. It's always my favorite hour of the week. I hope it's your favorite hour as well. And from the looks of things, it's been a really successful year for Bite Me Podcast listeners. We'll get to that in just a second, but just a couple of quick reminders as always. To subscribe to the podcast. It's been off the charts good, and that tells us that we're doing something right, and you guys are enjoying it enough to keep coming back and listening. Subscribe on iTunes, on Spotify, Google Podcasts, wherever you go. And then there's the engine, so to speak, the motor to it all is your questions and your comments and your topic suggestions, and that comes via the Bite Me group page. We have a couple of questions, actually more than a couple of questions from listeners this week, but also we have some, I guess, interaction with some of our listeners, which I think is pretty cool. And I'm going to start with Captain Caleb and Scott with that right there. But we really appreciate you guys listening. So let's dig right in. Let's get a full hour of fishing discussion and other things in right away. And what I wanted to start with, guys, is this is kind of like the why we do it, the why, as people like to say. So I'm scrolling through the Bite Me group page on Facebook, as I always am, and I see one post about one of our listeners saying, "Hey man, this is the biggest redfish I've ever caught." Or no, it was I caught a redfish on a fly. Thank you, Captain Scott and Caleb for everything. But he was specifically thanking you, Scott, for some of the discussion we've had on catching redfish on fly, etc. Then I scroll down a little more. And I see another listener on the Bite Me group page talking about, some of the trout tactics that he learned from us on the Bite Me group page. I mean, on the Bite Me podcast. And then another one, and I'm looking at this one right now, Jesus, talking about, using the confidence lure that we talk about. And he caught them all on the same lure and paid attention to what was around him, as we've discussed on the podcast. And I'm like, I don't want to be like, pulling a muscle, trying to pat ourselves on the back. But this is the why. I just scrolled some more. I see Jesse caught my personal best trout in East Matagorda Bay, 25 and a half inches, thanking us for some of the advice and some of the strategies that he's used. And Scott, I'll start with you, since that was the first point with the fly redfish. You guys see these same posts, and it just makes me feel good. And I think it's sort of validating for us, but also validating for listeners. You and Caleb know what the hell you're doing. And I know just enough to be dangerous and to kind of steer this ship in the right direction. But that made my week. It's like four or five different posts all on the podcast. I mean, all about the podcast on the Facebook group page.
We get lucky sometimes.
Every once in a while. The birds were working.
I don't know. It's a lifetime of experience of being on the water and just being on here to be able to talk about it and kind of more or less direct people into what we've seen in the past and see if they can match it up with what they're seeing out there on the water on that day.
It's pretty impressive. Caleb, you have a lot of listeners that join you on trips as well. So I'm sure you get this interaction in person, but the why we do it is starting to come to fruition with a lot of our listeners. And you know, I saw that one 25 and a half inch trout, personal best. I remember when I caught my first 25. I mean, it's special, man. And so that's why I wanted to mention that these guys are doing right, and you and Scott are doing right as well.
I'd like to point out that my years in the water are substantially less than Scott's.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've got, I don't know, maybe closing in on 20, and he has like four times that. So I think Scott's a lot more.
80 years on the water?
Yeah, Scott's a lot more to thank for that. And you know, and unfortunately, Scott grew up in a household. He didn't get his first boat until he was, you know, 25, 30 years old. So it's hard to
what?
Not learn from a guy.
That, he said that he got his first boat.
Oh, but, okay.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, wait a minute.
Yeah, I was younger than that.
Yeah, no. From what I understood, that Scott got his first boat in his early 30s and then put all that time in on the water after that.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, that's the way it went.
But no, it's what we like to do. That's why we're the kind of guys we are. I'd rather teach myself out of a job than anything else. That's just what I like to do. I like to coach little kids in sports. So I like to, you know, pass forward what I got. Scott and I both been in situations where, you know, we were the new guys. We didn't know a lot about it, and both of us had people help us. And there's no reason not to pass that forward to some extent, right?
I just like to exchange ideas.
Let me tell you a story. I learned something new today.
Yeah.
Or I say today. Last Friday. I learned something new last Friday. Scott, you ever heard of working ducks?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Didn't see that coming. man, we were out poling around and we had been through a pond or two, and it was kind of slow, and there was only what I can guess to be a wounded green blue winged teal. I don't know what the heck that is, but that's what the customer said it was. And like I said, we hadn't caught a fish in probably about an hour, and I was cruising up, and me being me, I said, "Bet you can't catch that duck." And so I got him within firing distance, and he shot at that duck and landed, I don't know, maybe 10 inches outside that duck. And as soon as it hit the water, bam, just drilled a redfish.
Oh, really?
We took pictures and laughed, and we're like, oh man, you know, that was cool. That was different. And I go back to, let's catch a duck. And so I pull down on this duck again. He gets close. He casts at him, missed him maybe a foot or two. Bam, another redfish. All I can figure is these snowy egrets and seagulls and stuff ain't got nothing on a wounded blue wing teal. I'm kind of thinking, was that redfish sizing that duck up for dinner?
How big was it?
It wasn't as big as that duck. Now they were like 22 inch redfish.
Scott always gives me a hard time about this because Nick Mosley's dad, Mike Mosley, is the first one that told me about ducks that have been sitting for a long time in the middle of a bay, like or on the near a shoreline or something. And I didn't buy it at first, but I've experienced it probably, you know, half a dozen times since. Now it's on the busy weekends. It's not as pronounced because ducks are always being spooked by boats. But you know, you have a slow day, you're out there on a Tuesday or Thursday or something, not a lot of boats. And then the ducks have been sitting for a long time. Nick's dad, flat out just taught me. I mean, this is kind of how we got into this. Like, I just like the exchange of ideas. I didn't buy it. He said, let's just ease up to where those ducks are. The ducks ultimately, you know, flew on. We started casting. It's consistent. It's been consistent. I don't know how much anymore. You can catch some trout underneath ducks that have been sitting for a long time. And I think it's just the food chain. You know, ducks are pooping. Other bait fish and other things are scooping up whatever it is. It just creates a ruckus under the water. And ultimately that would create, you know, some sort of dinner or food for bait for fish. I've caught trout. No, Scott refuses to believe me and gives me a hard time, even if he does believe me, probably half a dozen times. If the ducks are there and you're sitting, especially like you're on a long drift or you're waiting and you just see ducks sitting, like a bunch of ducks just sitting, scoot on out there, give it a shot. You'd be surprised.
I think the real lesson here is you can learn all kinds of stuff while harassing wildlife.
Yeah, you can.
So let's push that forward to the listeners.
You're next time, you listeners. Guys and listeners as well, all our Bite Me listeners. Next time you come across Nick Mosley, ask him about his dad and the ducks, because I've experienced it. It works, man. It has worked. Could be luck, but it's been at least half a dozen times. So take that, Scott Null.
I've seen it in the backwaters. I've seen it where, you know, I've jumped a bunch of ducks out of a pond, and the pond's all stirred up, you know, from those ducks, and they'll be redfish feeding in there. I don't know if they're, the ducks feed on the grass that's on the bottom, and maybe they're stirring up a bunch of shrimp. I don't know what the correlation would be, but I have seen it happen in the far back lakes.
Yeah, it's pretty remarkable. Hey, we have some topics here, but I was reminded, and I just saw the text as I'm talking to you guys. Someone was texting me, it's a buddy of mine, says he always loves, you know, what would Scott do and what would Caleb do at the end of each episode, and he always tries to take it to heart. He goes, you know, one thing I'd like to know occasionally, so let's do it today. I'm looking at the text right now. He says, one thing I'd like to hear from those guys occasionally is what's happened. Like, how's the fishing been? Now, I didn't even ask you guys this week how much you've been on the water. But in other words, kind of like, not necessarily a fishing report, but I guess technically that's what it would be. But like, ask Scott, ask Caleb, you know, so I'm doing it at the beginning of the show, because at the end, we're going to look at the conditions and what's coming up this weekend and ask you guys what you would do. But what's been happening? You know, Caleb, I'm going to start with you. I don't know how much water time you've been on the water lately, but what has happened this week for those who might be going out like today and want to hear what you've seen?
I was on the water every day last week. It really doesn't correlate to this week at all. Last week, the tides were really high and the water had warmed up, and they were kind of acting like September fish. I was starting to see some schools of small trout under birds and stuff like that. But the schools of redfish had dissipated for the most part, as far as showing themselves anyway. Now we lost a foot of water, and the water temperature was, I think, 55 in Matagorda and 59 in Sargent.
Man.
And I'm hoping maybe our November pattern finally kicks off once all the wind goes away, which looks like it's going to maybe have a chance of happening after Thanksgiving, I guess. It's been the windiest stinking November I can remember in a long time. And yeah. Scott and I were texting about that earlier, and I said, this is the worst November that I can ever remember. And Scott went back on his 80 years and said he remembered a worse one. So
it was about 68 years ago.
Yeah.
But Scott, we'll get to that, the wind and the tide, because that's one of the topics we have right now. But how much have you been on the water? Have you been able to be on the water?
I've canceled several trips.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just been nasty. You know, too much wind and just nasty, nasty conditions. Made it out with one of our listeners last week, and it sucked, honestly. It was rough. He caught a couple fish on fly. One of them was weird. He caught one, and he was blind casting, saw some swirl, and just blind cast early. Couldn't see the fish. Caught a red, and they were pushing shrimp along the banks, and yeah, you could see some fish moving, but you couldn't really make them out. And he's got his fly. We're taking a picture of his fish with him sitting on the side of the boat, and his fly's just laying in the water. And after he releases the redfish, he picks his rod up, and there's a redfish on it.
It wasn't the same one?
No, it was not the same fish. It ate the fly while it was just laying there in the water.
All right. I'm going to catch my first fish on fly, I hope.
And that was like, it was early on in the day. I mean, it was like really early. I thought, man, they're eating. They are eating today. You know, if they're just going to eat a fly that's just floating next to the boat, well, that was not the case.
You know what's funny?
It got way worse after that.
Wow.
But it was high water. Water was off color from all the wind. Super high tides. We had solid cloud cover. You couldn't see fish. And we had some wind. So what I always tell people on the sight casting side of things, high water, dirty water, you know, combine that. Clouds and wind. You got three conditions there that are against you. If you got all three, you ain't gonna do much today. Give me two out of three of those, we can make it work, sort of. If I've only got one of those things working against me, then we're gonna have a decent day. If all three of them are gone, stand back. It's fixing to happen. But those are your main three conditions that you got to watch.
Say them again.
All three. High water is negative. Heavy cloud cover is negative. This is for sight fishing.
Yeah.
And wind, you know, if it's over, you know, 15 miles an hour.
Right.
And if you get those three together, you know, it's going to be really rough. And here lately, all three have been pretty much every day.
Mother Nature said, check, check, check.
Yeah. Yeah. So do you guys think that means December is going to be November this year?
I would not venture to say such a thing at this moment. I need to have some decent days to buy my child a Christmas present.
I am not going to dare Mother Nature to do anything.
Yeah. I bought a Poland skiff and November turned into May.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, it's funny. You talk about that. Go ahead.
It just gets, it gets to the point where you feel, you know, that we talk about all the time. It seems like I forgot how to fish. I know the damn fish are there. I was on them the week before. I mean, I was on them, dude. I mean, every day, not a problem seeing 100, 200, 300 fish in a day. Mm. You know, getting 40, 50 shots at fish. They're there. The fish are there. But you get the cloud cover. You can't see into the water. You get the high water. That makes it even more difficult. They spread out more. And then you get the wind on top of that, which just makes casting, poling, everything a little more difficult.
Yeah.
Boat control. And you end up running over a lot of fish because you got the high water. You can't see them because of the clouds. And the wind's blowing you too fast to be going slow and really, you know, searching over the water. So that's why those three things are so bad.
But if we do have, and it figures, we're not going to be like freezing our butts off. Wouldn't make any promises, but if we have relatively mild temperatures in December and the winds come down, I mean, that it should be able to, we should be able to catch up to what we think we were going to catch. We thought we were going to catch this month, right?
It should get, I mean, it'll be better. No doubt.
Yeah.
But optimal. I think optimal is the word we're looking for.
Yeah.
Yes.
For right now. I mean, for what we like to do. Yeah. It's bad for the guy who wants to go out and throw topwaters and blind cast.
Yeah.
It's fine. You can, you can fish those conditions all day long. That's not a problem. It's just our specific thing that we like to do.
Right.
It's not very good for it.
Yeah. Well, it's funny you mention that. Caleb, I'm gonna start with you on this one because this is it was a long question, so I shortened it for the sake of the topic here. Finding happiness when you're miserable. So the question was about, I want a big trout. I don't mind, you know, grinding as you guys have talked about, as we've talked about here. But what is the advice for really like overcast, high water, everything Scott just basically talked about? He says, I'm willing to go out there. I've got, you know, what do I need? What is the advice to stay, you know, sort of plugged in and interested when it is windy, cold, and wet? You know, what would you tell people? I'm guessing, obviously, I'm guessing that wade fishing would be in order, but what would you tell them? You're just going to be miserable at some point.
Yeah. Welcome to be a wade fisherman, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Spend the money on the clothes. No doubt about it. Spend the money to have thin layers of clothes that are very warm. Because if you're bulky, it sucks. And if you're cold, it sucks.
Yeah.
Other than that, I mean, I guess the happiness is just the reward at the end of the day when you catch what you're out there being miserable for. You're miserable whether you want to be or not. You can be as happy as you want out there. You know, what do people say? Well, it's better than a day at the office, or
right.
You know, I just love being outdoors. I don't care. You're gonna be miserable if it's like that. But if you spend the money on the clothes, you can cut down a whole lot on it. I think, I mean, and this isn't a flex by any means, it's a necessity, but I bet you whenever I'm cold, whenever I'm winter waiting, I bet you I'm wearing 1500, 2 grand on my body.
Right.
When I'm going, but the stuff lasts forever and ever. I got stuff that I was wearing 15 years ago. So bite the bullet, spend the money. You're going to be a lot less miserable. And if you're not cold and shaken and wet, then you can focus on what's going on around you.
Yeah. And
passion, drive, and patience. What brings home the winning trophy is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance, from superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has got you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to turn your car into the MVP and bring home that win. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
You had a post, speaking of our listeners, on the group page. Somebody was asking you, was it Grundon's or Sims or what jacket would be the best? I think that might have been the same guy that was that sent me this question. But you spend a little more, you know, I know everybody, you know, is trying to have a budget here, but spend a little more and you might just be a little happier ultimately when you are getting that done. Right.
There's no doubt about it. And by the base layers, I mean.
So what are you? Let's name names here. What would you recommend? Because we are always telling people. You know, that, you know, this is stuff that we use. It's not just, for show here, but, I know Fishing Tackle Unlimited will have a lot of this stuff. Wait, Anglers Anonymous will have a lot of this stuff. So what would you recommend head to toe real quick before I ask a question for Scott?
Well, me and Scott are going to sound like brand ladies of the nights because I can't say the other word on here,
but it's okay.
We both have our own preferences. I wear all Grundons. They make a base layer called Grundies, I believe it is. And it's a kind of a real thick, real dense base layer. I wear it. I have a pant set, and I have a shirt, and I wear it bare to my skin. I don't wear an undershirt or anything because I want my body heat to trap into that. And then on top of that, I've got some sort of a Primaloft jacket. I don't even know what the name of the Grundon's ones is, but I really like that one. And I might put a hoodie on top of that. And outside of that, it's just a I use the Buoy X in the wintertime. It's a heavier, thicker Gore-Tex jacket. My waders are Sims and my boots are Sims. Mm-hmm. And that's really, it can be 40 degrees and I'm comfortable in that. I don't have a problem with it. If it gets super duper cold, I got some sort of Hodgman duck hunting jacket that I don't know why I own it, but I have it and I'll wear that on top of it. But the one thing that I find that really helps me is I have this super fruity scarf that I stole from my wife, and I wrap it up and I stick it where wind can't go down my neck into my jacket while I'm driving the boat. And that's
a good idea.
Yeah. It helps a lot. It smells pretty nice most of the time and it makes me pretty. I like it.
You're just a doll.
If you don't have access to the Grundon's, what I wore forever and ever and ever, and you might get lucky and find it at Bass Pro Shop, but you're probably going to have to order it. And it's the Under Armour 4.0 base layer. And the way that stuff works is it's got like this waffle type material on the inside of it. And essentially it makes little pockets of air close to your body that keeps you warm. And I wore that for a long time. I find that the Grundon's is better, but that 4.0 kept me alive for a long time.
Scott, give me yours. And then I'll bounce something else off of you guys. I think this is an interesting topic, especially this time of year.
I've got a combination of Sims and AFCO. The Sims base layers, they're based out of Montana. They came from the stream trout fishing world. And so, you know, they're used to cold, and it's the base layer. It's almost like silk. I mean, it's a real, real fine, but there's a lot of days that's, I've got that and maybe some insulated pants and a couple layers on the top and I'm good. I've been out in some real, real cold in that, AFCO's got the Reaper series.
Mm-hmm.
I've talked about them in the past. They've expanded that. The Reaper has a neck gaiter built into it.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to have that foo-foo scarf. You got a neck gaiter that's you know, stopping that wind and everything coming inside your jacket. And
what if you want a foo-foo scarf?
Well, I mean, some of us do. But, you know, that's just not me. But anyway, it's got hoods, you know, it's got a hood, it's got the neck gaiter you can pull up and it's all part of it. It's got hand warmer pockets in it. I mean, it's just a really solid piece of equipment. The biggest thing that I've found in both Sims and AFCO both have Windstopper in their look for that in mm-hmm. Then you don't need as much bulk.
Right.
The wind is what, you know, gets you. It cuts through your clothes and pulls all that the heat away from you. So if you've got the Windstopper in there, it really helps. Sims is called Windstopper. I forgot what AFCO's is called.
Yeah.
Basically, it does the same thing. There's a layer inside there that absolutely blocks all the wind out. And with that, I can go a whole lot lighter on my layers, and then I'm not as bulked up, and I can move around a little bit better. But that's the biggest part of it, is being able to stay warm,
yeah,
with multiple layers, and still be able to move around and still be able to fish and do whatever you're doing outside.
I'd like to point out that my company is also from the Pacific Northwest and knows about cold stuff.
Just so we know.
Yeah. He kind of got me on that one. He's like, well, they're up there in Montana.
Yeah, like, hey.
Bozeman, Montana. I think it gets cold there. I'm not sure.
Scott, yeah, Scott, you and I are old enough to, you know, to remember wade fishing, well, even in jeans, but at this time of year, you know, wade fishing with the basically plastic, whatever those waders were. Good old fashioned long johns, man. I mean, that's yeah. what I had many times.
They were cotton. That's the other yes. thing. Do not yeah. wear anything that's cotton. All the stuff that we're talking about is all synthetics.
And if they got wet, it's over.
Oh, cotton will kill you if you get wet in it. It seriously over. Will. Cotton's a killer.
I guess what I'm getting at here is make sure you don't have any leaks anywhere. That might be priority number one. Because you get just a little something in your shoe or on the footy of the waders, and that's going to be bugging you, and it's going to freeze you like the whole day. That's the miserable part.
Well, what we were wearing was old rubber waders.
Yeah.
And I had the cotton long johns underneath, the old style cotton long johns.
And jeans. Or some sort of
pants. And a sweatshirt. Yeah. And then a rain jacket on top of a sweatshirt. That's how we tried to stay warm. We did not stay warm.
You're walking around like the abominable snowman or something. You're just one big, you know, stay puffed marshmallow man.
When the water got, when the water pressure like got on them, they squeezed you to death.
Yeah.
Like it almost turned your face blue.
Yeah, and then we went
to neoprene after that. Neoprene.
I liked the neoprene. I thought I was in hog heaven.
That was some form fitting stuff right there.
Yeah. You couldn't hide a thing. It had all your bends and lumps.
I remember one time duck hunting, I put on so many clothes. Salt water was freezing that day. I mean, there was ice on the salt water, and I had so many layers of clothes on, and I was just bundled up sitting there, and the first ducks came in, I couldn't shoulder my shotgun.
Yeah.
I couldn't get it up there onto my shoulder to shoot the gun because there was so many layers on there.
I may or may not still have some neoprene waders that are hanging in my shop
bag. Stink.
Oh, God, boy, you got to turn them inside out. And you can have the sweat smell in them.
Yeah. That's the other thing. The great thing about all this new clothing that we're using, it's all moisture wicking.
Yeah.
It all pulls the moisture out and away from you through the Gore-Tex. That was the original, was Gore-Tex. Mm-hmm. And that makes a huge difference. You know, you're out there wading and you're, you know, pushing through the mud and you're going to work up a sweat. And the worst part used to be the worst part. You'd work that sweat up. Going out, set your decoys up or going on a long wade, and now you're wet on the inside, and that cotton's just holding that wet, and now you're getting really cold.
I can't even tell you. I can't even begin to tell you how many times. Plus, you're jumping out of the boat in deeper water because the boats weren't going as deep, as shallow. So you're just, it was that's miserable. Oh, I know what I was going to say. You know, to answer his question, whenever, and I deliberately don't do this very much unless I feel like I'm really going to get on the fish or something. Cold, windy, you know, high tide, nasty weather. I don't do it very often, but when I do, I think part of it is just mental. Like I go into when I have a wade like that, and when I know I'm going to be out in that conditions and it's going to be like that, I'm much better off handling it because I know it's coming. You know what I'm saying? It's like, if you just know what you're getting into, dress accordingly, prepare accordingly, get your wade right belt. That's very important to me because it's a vest. It's on my chest. I can put my rod. I don't have to worry about falling, and you can manipulate with bulkier clothes a lot easier. You know, you can do all that, but just mentally say, all right, this is going to be, it can be fun. And it's kind of like going to sit in a deer blind in the cold. You can, it's really kind of fun because you got the right attitude going in, you know?
Yeah, being prepared, you know, having the right mindset, that's a huge part of it. Knowing that your clothing is going to work all together and work in concert to keep you a little bit warmer and a little more comfortable, that helps with the mental side of it going into it as well.
Yeah.
But it's still a grind. I mean,
that's why I pick my spots, man.
There are parts of you that you're not going to be able to cover.
No
fingertips,
question.
You know, they're going to get cold. They're going to get numb. Your nose, you know, is more than likely going to get cold. Pretty much everything else you can cover up pretty well. Your damn feet. That's the hardest part for me.
Yep.
Is keeping my feet from getting numb.
But you're
constricted already because you're in socks and waders and you got a layer of neoprene on your feet. And then you've got your boots. And so your circulation isn't the best anyway.
Right.
All that stuff on. And there, I have never really found any way in wading to keep my feet from being cold.
Yeah. I mean, you can try. You can put some of those socks on and all that stuff. But it still just kind of it delays the inevitable, you know.
I own specific cold wading boots that are like a size too big. So that I can get it. I wear two pairs of socks, but I can still wiggle my toes and everything. If you can't wiggle your toes, you're done. It's over.
Yeah. I've got my big, I got a size 14. I usually wear 13 that I have for exactly that. And they're good quality, Sims. So that matters, as well. While I'm at it, talking about, the wade rights, good time to mention, go ahead and go on to coastalfishinggear.com and get that 20% off. Remember, it's for the Bite Me combo, Bite Me 20, and you're good to go with 20% off of what was really, it's going to end up being like $70, $80 or less than the ticket value on that. So this is another one that we got, from the group page. Scott, you were talking about your drain day, and you posted some really cool comments on some questions you had about the dump and all that. But the question I got with regard to that is, are the water levels still high? I mean, how much has that helped? What has happened? What are the water levels out there right now? And what does that mean?
They've come back up right behind that front. There's so many fronts now, I can't keep them straight. I think it was two fronts ago.
Which was the day before yesterday.
Yeah, I think it was the day before yesterday, whatever it was. That was a hell of a front. It blew really, really hard. I mean, 30, 35, and it was northwest. So I was sitting here, and I just started playing around on the that NOAA site and the tide site that I always watch, and started looking at different points up and down the coast and seeing how it would affect that wind was going to affect the different parts of the coast.
And
it was really interesting. The backwaters dumped out really quick. The little jetties at Port O'Connor, it actually went straight up about 8 or 10 inches. The water went up. That's that funnel effect.
Yeah. Talked about that a couple of weeks ago.
All that huge amount of backwater pushed into that funnel, and it made more water there. And then eventually that drained out. But what overall happens with that strong northwest, when it does hit the coast, you know, gets off the beachfront. In the beginning of that, it was only blowing in the upper parts of the bay. Then as the front pushed on through, it got on out, and then it pushes all that Gulf water away from the beach. And that creates a vacuum that sucks more water out of the bay and allows more of it to drain out faster.
Yeah.
It was really interesting to watch it happen from different perspectives, different tide gauges all up and down the coast. And we did have a really good dump. If you could have stood, you know, could
withstand it. Yeah. No question.
You could get there. I guarantee you the redfish were feeding like crazy on that dump. And then, you know, the winds relaxed briefly and then turned around and was ripping out of the southeast. So that southeast is going to blow it right back up. So last time I glanced at it, the tides are running about a foot above what they're supposed to be right now.
Same thing in our neck of the woods, Caleb.
Yeah. It's about a foot high right now. It dropped from 2 foot down to 1 foot.
Yeah.
But it's still high. That water was real high before right before the front hit. That water was super high.
You know what's funny is Snoop Dogg high. Snoop Dogg high with a
Snoop
corona.
Dogg, if Snoop Dogg high? And Willie Nelson were fly fishermen, it was that high.
That's the tide.
That's it.
That's the tide. Mm-hmm. It's funny though, we're sitting here talking about all this, the miserable conditions and wet and windy and dressing right and high tides and all that. And I'm sitting here thinking, you know, the funny thing about that, we might have the cold feet. We might be, you know, getting the wind cutting into our jacket and kind of miserable and wet, But the minute you get that good hookup with a trout or a redfish, I don't feel a damn thing.
Nope.
I don't feel the cold. I don't feel. No. Isn't that amazing? Like, it's like all fine after that.
Yeah. Same thing happened yesterday evening. I was sitting out in my deer stand right when this last front hit. And it was hot going out. Not hot, but it was 70 degrees. You know, about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I walked out there. I didn't have a jacket on or anything. I carried one. But even then, I was sitting out there, and the north wind just kicked up, and it started getting cold, and it was right at dark. I was ready to pack it up. You know, it was pretty chilly. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, I'd been watching deer all afternoon, nothing I was going to shoot, but three pigs came out.
Attaboy.
And I grabbed the gun, I got to exterminate my pigs. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't the least bit cold. On them. Yeah, I'm waiting on them to move around where I could get a good clean shot at them. And the cold was gone. There was no,
it's
all mental.
It's an amazing phenomenon. You see that trout, break the water and start flapping around, as he's pulling your line. You're like, man, this is awesome. I don't feel anything at all. This is cool. Let's do this again next week.
Well, the first thought that goes through your head is not only do you tell your buddies that you caught a big fish, but you can also tell them you were a tough guy when you did it.
Yeah. Exactly. You know, one other thing, Scott, that I was thinking about when you were talking about the fly on the water, you know, and the fish hit it. Have you guys ever had a client lose a rod because they leave their lure in the water when they're messing with something else?
I've lost rods that way.
I've almost lost one. I had to catch it, but you only do it once. This was about 10, 15 years ago. And I don't know, I was messing with something, you know, and the little plastic was still in the water and boom. And but I had the rod in my hand, it just kind of jumped out. And so I finally grabbed it and I think I lost the fish, but still, you know, just like, oh, wow. I mean, I've heard so many stories of the rods just going like a fish hitting a bait and the rod is gone.
Well, I was doing it up in the Brazos River, messing around with some tarpon up in there. Mm-hmm. And tarpon were in thick. It was a good drought going on. Tarpon were all over the place, and I'd caught a big bull red while I was trying to catch tarpon, of course, and hadn't even really seen any tarpon that day, and got the red, got it up there, rod's leaning against the side of the boat, lure's about maybe a foot out of the water, give or take, and the rod's, you know,
out of the water.
Out of the water, and the rod's, you know, I'm not even considering it not to be safe that way. And I'm messing with this bull red, and I get a little measurement on him, and I go to turn him loose. And as I'm turning him loose, this tarpon comes out of the water and grabs that lure that's hanging a foot out of the water and grabs a hold of it and goes down. Well, that flexed the rod on the side of the boat. And as that tarpon went down, the rod tip went down with him, and the reel went shooting. I mean, I bet it went 6 or 8 feet in the air and did a big somersault back into the water. that vision remained with me for a long, long. Well, still there.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was a big old mouth, big old bucket mouth. Looked like a 5 gallon bucket came up and just grabbed that lure and slung my rod a long ways. There was no recovery.
Yeah, that was gone.
Yeah, I'm in 40 feet of water.
Caleb,
I was this fall when we were over at the World Series. Me and a very seasoned fishermen were out messing around, and we decided to run offshore a little bit to some islands out there, check for some fish. We ended up in a bunch of tarpon. And I don't think Chuck's had a whole lot of experience out there doing that. Mm-hmm. And I'm standing up on top of my burn bar, and he was casting redfish stuff at him. And finally I told him, hey, you know, find you something big and white, and you're gonna need to put a long leader on, because if you do catch something, he'll cut you off if you don't. And so Chuck's sitting down there on the floor of the boat, and he's tying all this stuff on, and it takes him about 10 minutes to get it all tied up. And while we're doing it, I'm talking about how many jacks and sharks are underneath my boat. And he gets all this stuff done and tied up, and he, like, you know how you get your lure and just throw it over the side of the boat when you're ready to go?
Yeah, you get
just his rod and reels land across his lap, and I see him throw the lure, and in the air is like, no. And when it hit the water, man, a jack was waiting on it, and he smacked it, and Chuck caught his rod by the very back of the butt.
That's what I did. Yeah.
It looked like you're playing tug of war. All I could do was hold it and pull while this jack runs off with it, breaks everything that he had just tied up and start all over again. But he almost lost his rod there.
That's exactly what happened.
A peanut butter M&M's production.
In a world where Super Bowl winners get the world's admiration and a fancy ring, but the runners-up get nothing, one retired cop returns.
That's one retired quarterback. Read the script.
Oh, sorry. One retired quarterback returns to claim what's his.
That's claim a ring with diamonds made from M&M's peanut butter. But you're on a roll.
The Ring of Comfort, coming soon to a Super Bowl near you.
I don't know what it was, but it wasn't a tarpon or a jack, that's for sure. All right, so go ahead. You got something, Caleb?
No, I just told you what I have.
You were just
I thought it was pretty entertaining. I'm sorry I didn't have more for you, John.
No, you didn't disappoint. You never do. You never do. All right, let's go to, for about 4 or 5 minutes here, let's go to JT over at the Boatyard, because I asked him this the other day. He gave me an answer. I said, you know what? Let's talk about this for the podcast. Boat maintenance that you should do and boat maintenance that you probably should not do. JT Koshy over at the Boatyard, he's always entertaining. Back at the Boatyard with my guy, JT Koshy, in Kema. They do it all. They are a fantastic outfit and really good people. Jacob, JT, the whole gang out there. So this is sort of like counterintuitive. We're talking to a guy at the Boatyard that sells and services and redoes boats, motors, the whole nine yards, about do-it-yourselfers. So part of it is funny, but I know you wanted to talk about this because we all acknowledge a lot of outdoorsmen like to do things themselves. So let's get to the expert here. If you are going to help a do-it-yourselfer, what are some things that they should, you know, be able to do by themselves? Of course, hopefully we encourage them to go see you at the Boatyard if they need any specific parts or such. And some do-it-yourself ideas that are probably not the best do-it-yourself ideas.
Yeah, let's start off with servicing. Servicing is a pretty straightforward and usual thing. There's two things that you really can't get from servicing at home compared to what we do here. When we do a service here, we check all the little things, general functions and looks of a motor under the cowling. And we also pull downloads, service history as far as the computer of the engine. For the do-it-yourselfers where that's not as important, we'll sell you the service parts. And man, if you have a question, just ask us. You know, at the end of the day, we'd rather the motor get the service done and be better taken care of so you don't have huge problems down the line than just not coming to us because you don't want to pay the extra dime for someone else to do it. And we understand that completely. We carry, you know, for all the brands, Yamaha, Suzuki, Tohatsu, everyone, service parts. So man, just give us a ring. And if you have any questions, let us know. We're happy to help. Some things that I might not recommend doing.
Yeah, that's what I was going to get to, because that's really nice of you to help the do-it-yourselfers, but there are some things you need to be at the Boatyard.
Yeah, 100%. Wiring issues. 12-volt systems on boats that go in water, which are all boats, especially salt water. If connections are not made correctly or certain circuits are overloaded, it can present a huge safety risk, and where things could catch on fire, things could overheat, things could unnecessarily fail that could save you down the line, like say a bilge pump. So paying the extra dime to have a professional look at it and do it is well worth it. If you have any doubt, watch 10 YouTube videos. After 10 YouTube videos, if you still don't feel confident, man, just take it to a professional like us or the closest person near you. We'll help you out with anything you need. I think, yeah, that's pretty solid. After 10 YouTube videos, if you're not confident, bring it in. If you are, just call us. You know, we'll sell you the parts and ask some questions if needed.
And the other thing is the fiberglass work. A lot of guys can patch some stuff. I know a boat that you guys sold for me a while back. I didn't care what it looked like. It was just on the very back on the transom. I just wanted it patched real good, not the scuff marks. But most people, that's not the case. If you want fiberglass work, I mean, you guys, I've seen it. I've seen your shop. It's just incredible. Fiberglass work probably needs to be not a do-it-yourself job.
Yeah, huge health factor, health risk, working with fiberglass resin. the second you take one sand scratch on a piece of gel coat or fiberglass, there's immediately airborne small little particles that you could be inhaling, you could be breathing in, you could get in your eyes. So that's very dangerous. It's also something that you need to do with a lot of like patience and just skill of doing it time and time and time and time and over and over and over. So there's two things that I'd recommend, you know, bringing it into us for some help.
Yeah, that's why you guys are the best. That's JT Koshy at the Boatyard. I got to come out and see you guys real soon. Certainly want to make sure everything is going well over there. I'm sure you guys have a good stock of new boats as well coming in, as always, including our favorite, my favorite, the Freedom Boats. All right, boys, back at it here on the podcast with Captain Caleb and Captain Scott. Let's talk about the Flounder shutdown real quick before we talk, get another couple of questions in from our listeners. I haven't really mentioned this too much, and we should. We talk about fishing. The flounder, no flounder to keep between, I guess it was November 1st and December 14th. Is that what the final date is there? I know we have it on our licenses, but for about a month and a half, you can't keep any flounder. Scott, I always start with you on these because you have such a good network of people who are in the business, so to speak, and biologists and game wardens and all that stuff. What's the sentiment about what the flounder shutdown is going to do, has done for that fishery?
It can't do anything but help. Their whole reason for it is that's the time that the flounder migrate. They go to the pinch points. Everybody set up at the pinch point. Everybody knew where they were. Mm-hmm. Seawolf Park. Yeah, everybody's standing shoulder to shoulder, and it gets to a point where the fish are trying to get through there to go out to spawn, and it's like going to a gill net. I mean, there's hooks everywhere, and people were taking way, way too many fish out of it, and those are our spawners, are the ones heading offshore to go do their thing for the winter. And by not having having a season for them where you can't catch them while they're going out there to migrate, basically, you're kind of taking advantage of a fishery mm-hmm. at its weakest point. And so it can't be anything but good to let all those spawners go out there. I've noticed over the last few years that I see a whole lot more flounder up shallow while I'm poling. I mean, it's a
constant you're seeing thing. It.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's constant. I mean, we've got flounder running out from under the boat all the time. I mean, all in the backwaters. There was a few years there where I really wasn't, I'd see two or three a day maybe. I'm seeing 10, 15, 20 a day, 30 a day. I mean, there's a lot more flounder these days than there used to be.
Yeah. Caleb, you seeing any of the same things?
Watch how eloquently I dodge this.
All right, let's do it.
I had a customer in the boat last week, and his goal this year set out was to catch a legal slam, right? And he caught a redfish and he caught a trout, because that's what I do. And then he said, all right, Cap,
none of us do flounder.
All I need is a legal flounder. I looked at him like, are you shitting me right now? We're going to do this. And I think we got one or two bites, didn't get them caught. And but my question was, I said, how are you going to catch a legal slam right now? He said, well, it's got to be over 15 inches. I said, well, it's over 15 inches. Can we keep it? He said, no. Well, there you go. We don't need to go flounder fishing. No, it's not possible to catch a legal slam this month.
But see, that's what I was going to talk about. You can still go catch flounder. You just can't keep
them. Some of us can.
You just can't keep them.
The low-hanging fruit flounder spots I know weren't really great. I was hoping that would work. Yeah, both of them.
Yeah. What'd you say, Scott?
I actually saw one of the biggest flounder I've seen in a long time the other day, way back in the backwaters. And the big ones don't usually move. Everybody gets all excited when that first front came through, when flounder was legal. And as soon as that first front would come through, everybody run to Seawolf Park or wherever their favorite little flounder spot was. And it's the males that migrate first.
Yeah.
And they're all the smaller ones. Mm-hmm. I think males probably don't get over 20 inches. And then I would never go to those places until after Thanksgiving. And part of the reason was I still saw really big flounder way back in the marsh. All up in first part of November. Mm-hmm. And the other day I saw a truly monster. I mean, it, It was a big, big flounder. Yeah. And it got up out of a bed and it was just cruising down the bank almost like a redfish.
That's so cool.
And we were sight casting to it. And of course, it didn't eat while it was, you know, he's waiting until he got settled somewhere to go eat. But we threw at him anyway, took some shots. But that was I hate to guess even
28
on weight, but he was a solid 26, 27 inch flounder and big, big flounder. And yeah. One of those thick ones, you know, when they get that size, they get real thick.
Oh my gosh, that's the best.
This thing, yeah. it had to be a 6, 7, 8 pound flounder.
Looks like a halibut.
Guy, it was big.
Yeah.
But that was cool to see that. I hadn't seen a big one like that in a long time.
You can catch them. Just put them back in the water. You can definitely catch them. There's no question about that. All right. So let's talk about bigger bait now. This is, and then we'll get to what would Scott do and what would Caleb do. This is another good question from one of our loyal listeners and posters on the Bite Me group page. Don't forget to join there. If you're just listening to us for the first time, it's a really cool place to brag a little bit, ask some questions and bring some topics to the table. So you always hear, this is the question, big bait, big fish. I'm always confused exactly what that means. How big, when do you know to throw bigger? When do you know to throw smaller? And when do you start throwing them? And I think what confused him here, Caleb, I'm going to start with you. You've got a lot of experience lately with, you know, big baits and corkies and topwaters and try to catch trout. How do you know when to go big? Or, you know, depending on the time of year, what you're seeing in the water, or what is it? How much bigger a bait should you throw right now?
Well, the common thought on that is when the water's cold that they want bigger bait, which is somewhat true, but a bit of a misconception, because what it is when the water's cold, a lot of the smaller bait isn't around anymore. The bigger bait's what's left. So that's what you're primarily seeing is the bigger bait is a great time to go to it. It's the, you know, big fish like big bait. It's a rule of nature of sorts where, you know, a fish is going to try to take in more calories than he burns. And if there's one the right size come by during the freeze, whatever year that was, a couple of years ago, me and Nick were finding trout with 10 inch mullet in their throats. I got a buddy over at Anglers Anonymous. He's a lure collector and he uses like these 8 or 10 inch hand carved wooden lures. They're all kind of wild stuff. Look like mice and ducks. He swears mm-hmm. he catches fish on them. But I'll even go so far as to when Pat and I fished the Legends in like 17 or 18, the water temperature was in the 40s then. And we wanted something real big and real slow. And I went as far as to get the offshore edition saltwater assassins. They were, I think they're like 6 or 7 inch. They look just like the small straight tails, mm-hmm. but they were 6 or 7 inches long. And the hardest part to do with that is finding the right hook to put in them, because it's pretty hard to find the hook that sits in the right spot on them. Yeah. But at the end of the day, to answer the question, it's when the big baits is what's left. You know, it doesn't look overly natural to the fish to see small stuff swimming by. But that being said, we'll throw little johns in that time of year too and bounce it off the bottom.
And that's not the case right now in terms of size of bait. The bait's still pretty small.
This is getting into January, February when it's really cold, early March, maybe. Again, corkies work year round, big baits work year round. But whenever you're specifically looking for that big, slow moving bait, you're looking at water temperatures below 55. Anything over 55, trout are still pretty stinking active. Mm-hmm. When you start getting those water temperatures below 55, that's whenever the bigger, slower stuff works, because the bait's bigger and the bait's cold and stunned too. It's moving slow. And it goes back around to matching the hatch like we do 12 months a year.
That's a good idea on getting those bigger plastics. That's a great idea right there. Scott, what's your determination on when you decide to go, if there's anything different from or to add to what Caleb said?
On the redfish side, I don't bother with it. But on trout, you can throw as big as you want. I mean, there's some bass lures out there that are huge. You know, some of those big swim baits. The biggest problem with throwing that kind of stuff is throwing that kind of stuff. Yep. It's not easy. It'll wear you out, you know, slinging a big bait like that. Doug Pike talked about it. Him and one of the guys down there, I think it was Webb, him and Cliff Webb decided they were going to throw these big, gigantic swim baits. And he said he threw it for about an hour. and his elbow wasn't handling it too well. His shoulder wasn't handling it too well. He said, yeah, it sounded like fun until he actually got out there and tried it. It would be very effective, I think, in the right situation. There's one out now called from Sixth Sense. That's a big bass lure company. Mm-hmm. And they've got one that's a good looking swim bait, and it's a 9-incher. And I've been kicking that around. I want to go out there and try that. And it's called the Draw Glide bait. They're expensive as hell.
Yeah.
That's the other part. You start getting into these swim baits, they get on up there, man. They're not cheap.
I've seen them for a couple hundred.
Yeah, this one's $75.
Yeah. You know, yikes.
That's not one.
What is this one?
It's Sixth Sense is the company, and it's called the Draw Glide bait. It is a sharp looking lure.
You're gonna make me spend $75, aren't you?
But I mean, it would work. There's no doubt it'd work. Yeah, hell, it'll work on redfish too. Like, we just had that post the other day from Josh Neumeyer. He had that redfish that was here.
Oh yeah, all kinds of different things in it. Yeah.
It had three tarpon in it. And all the tarpon were 7 or 8 inches long.
Yeah.
So, if a redfish is eating a 7 or 8 inch long tarpon, you can't throw a bait too big for him, I don't think. And same thing with trout. You know, Caleb talked about, you know, 10-inch mullet. If you can sling it and you can work it, they'll eat it in the right situation. So wintertime is definitely the right time to try it. And if you really want to, you know, like Doug Bike the other day, you know, a few years back, set your mind to it and say, that's what we're going to do today.
Yeah.
You can go out there. Just got to know that you're not going to get a whole bunch of fish. You know, those kind of days when if you're going to go do something like that, you're committed. You're basically trophy hunting.
Yeah.
That's all you're out there for, is to get that one big bite.
Caleb, I really feel like part of this with the big baits, and I've thrown them, you know, maybe not that big, but I like to throw big baits in February, is that it's mostly for the story, you know, to be able to say you caught, you know, a fish with that big bait, because you up except for about 3 or 4 weeks out of the entire year, you can kind of throw what we're throwing anyway, right? I mean, I'm going to be throwing the knock and tail. They got the 5.5-inch, they got the 3.5-inch, most all year round. If I'm not throwing a topwater or a corky or something, which are my other go-tos, but like part of it is just like you want to catch a fish on a big bait, but it's really the window. The window's what you tell me.
Aside from maybe throwing a topwater when the water's real cold, you can have a good day on anything at any time. I personally got really into corkies because I get less bored throwing them. Mm-hmm. I like working them and trying to figure out what makes it work. I get so stinking bored throwing a plastic and just jigging it back over and over and over. That's the reason I like side casting so much, because I'm not casting and making myself bored. I'm putting in front of something when I do cast it.
You can experiment more with corkies, right?
Oh yeah, the sky's, that's what, you know, I made a YouTube channel with, I don't know, like 12,000 people follow it, that And my base foundation is how to work a corky. But the fact of the matter is, there's no way to do it wrong. If you're, you know, let's go overboard to be safe. If you have your 10 things right on the corky, there's 1,000 more things you can add to it to make it do stuff. And that's what I like. I like tinkering and experimenting and playing and all that kind of stuff.
So that's what I all.
Okay. Picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. 2024 Santa Fe, available early 2024.
Go back to, I like figuring it out. You know, whether it's the retrieve, or letting it, the amount of time you let it sink, or working it fast or closer to the surface. That's what I like. Scott, you look like you want to say something on this.
When it comes right down to it, you're talking about trying to throw big baits. Of course, it's not that big.
No. You know,
what, 3.5 inches?
Yeah, it's a little thicker.
Yeah, I mean, and all these baits that we talk about, you know, even big topwater, you know, a full-size big topwater is 4. Yeah, you know, something like that. These fish are eating 10-inch mullet, mm-hmm. and that 3 or 4-inch long corky or anything like that. It can work year round.
Yeah.
They're used to eating that size. I mean, that's easy for them.
I think what my bigger point is, you can throw big baits, and I like doing it, whether it's corkies or topwaters, a lot. But you really only, like, quote, have to for like 3 weeks out of the year when it's really, really cold and it's really, really slow and the bait is all out except for the big bait. That's the only time you necessarily have to, but you can get away with it year round.
Me and Cochran got into an argument about this years ago.
Yeah.
And it was blasting cold. It was miserable. You put your foot in the water and your toes felt like golf balls in like 30 seconds. I mean, it was awful. And Kevin's take on the matter was, we're going to throw plastics and we're going to drag them real slow on the bottom. And I did that for a little while. And like I said before, I got so bored, I'd rather not catch a fish and throw a corky.
Yeah.
And end up putting a corky on it and catching fish on it whenever, you know, the rule was you had to drag it on bottom. So we tried this. We drug corkies on bottom and that worked too. But
you just drag them real slow?
Yep. But the answer you're looking for here is, yeah, there's only about 3 weeks out of the year that's the most optimal lure to throw.
Scott just texted me this Sixth Sense fish. Looks pretty dang sweet. 9 inches long, 3¾ ounces.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I mean.
You're throwing a shot put out there.
That's what I mean. You have to be dedicated to throw those things because they're huge.
You got to have special gear for it.
Yeah, you got to have a different rod.
Yeah.
You got to have a heavier rod. And those bass guys, man, that's what they do. They've got a rod for everything.
19 different rods laying on the front of their boat. That's pretty dang cool. God, you are going to make me spend $75 a day. All right. What would Scott do? What would Caleb do? This is kind of getting into that same rut, like when it was in summertime, Caleb, like you guys would be basically saying the same thing, for about 3 or 4 weeks there. I have a hunch, given last week's forecast and the weather and this week's forecast and weather, you might be saying stay home at least Saturday and Sunday. What's it look like?
Well, last week's forecast, I did anything but fish. I stayed home. This week, I don't get to do that.
You're getting out there?
Yeah, no, I'm out there. I got a guy flying in.
So what are you going to do?
I'm going to go find some deeper protected water, and I'm going to put on a heavy jig head, and I'm going to hop baits down low. That's what I'm going to do. And that's basically mostly just to stay out of the wind. Otherwise, if the wind chills out, like next Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, if the wind chills out, I think you can go drift in the bay and have some fun doing stuff like that. Go wade fish on a protected.
Well, it is going to get better, like Monday, right?
That's a rumor.
No,
I'm not seeing it.
So Saturday is.
Well, Monday's going to be better than Saturday and Sunday.
Saturday,
fire is better than a house fire.
Yeah. I got the high of 55 and a little rain, a lot of wind.
Well, I tell you what, most all of my fishing clothes are down in Matagorda in my bedroom. And I did some more packing today. And you know those big like offshore duffel bags that like the offshore workers take out to the rig?
Oh, yeah.
I've got two of those and it's nothing but base layers, jackets, waders.
Where are you guys coming from?
Alabama, I believe.
Okay, so they're not really necessarily used to all this. I'm going to show you guys this. See those bars right there? That says gust to 42.
What day is that? 42?
That's Saturday.
That's Saturday. Well, I'm glad it's calming down for Sunday.
I got it sustained at 32. Gust to 42.
My Saturday trip was four ladies, and I texted them earlier, and they quite clearly said, you know what, let's try it again in the spring. And I don't disagree with them.
Goodness, Scott. That's about as strong as you'll get this time of year.
I am looking through and thumbing through even a long-term forecast. Mm-hmm. And the first time that it goes below 10 miles an hour is Thanksgiving Day. That's the first time I'm seeing it go below 10. 15 to 20, 25 to 30. Gusting to 35. I mean, we've got it all this week as far as wind goes, and it is just a ton of wind. It's almost all northeast, so it's going to keep the water levels up. Looking at another forecast that shows some other stuff, there's not a day that's sunny. It's all clouds. Some days
crazy.
It's raining,
I'm looking
some days
at
it's
yeah.
not. Temperatures are going to stay 40s, 50s. Freaking miserable, man. I mean,
well, you know what?
I really don't know what else to tell you, but
yeah. Well, let's not even bother on that.
If you want to fish, you're going to have to do what we talked about earlier, dress for it. You're going to have to plan your day very well as to how you're going to get to where you're going to go, because it's going to be, I mean, there's a small craft advisory right now. I'm sure there will be on Saturday and Sunday,
dude.
Yeah, you can kind of work your way around and stay protected. And then the only way to fish right now would be to either anchor or get out and wade. And yeah. if I had to go, if I was, you know, just got to go.
Yeah.
You know, no two ways about it. Wife's kicking me out of the house and I got to go fish. It's going to be throwing corkies.
Get the wind at your back in some calm corkies, water.
Throwing some mirror lures, you know, something that'll kind of hover there, you know, the Miradines or something along those lines. Work them slow and stand in one spot that you have a good feeling about. Water's going to be high. You're going to have overcast. There's no sight casting, period. The wind's going to be blowing stupid. So if you really wanted to get out there and do something, I would do that, or maybe go to one of the flounder spots and just go have fun, catching some flounder.
Catch and
flounder
release.
Flounder going to be moving, catch and release, go play with the flounder. But mostly I would think that this would be a really good time to catch up on those honeydews, so that when the weather does break and it gets a little better, you've got
day after freedom. Thanksgiving, honey, got I'm out of here.
Yeah. Got a little freedom to take off and go do something.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, this is miserable.
Miserable.
This is not good.
If you want to get really confident in how far you can cast, this is the weekend.
Yeah.
My guy from Alabama just texted me. I think we're going to be able to try to move him to Thursday or Friday.
Good.
Oh man.
Good. Thank goodness. You'll catch some fish Thursday and Friday probably.
So. That sure would be cool, wouldn't it?
Yeah. It would be really cool.
Yeah. I was booked Wednesday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. So far, I've cut out the Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday, and now I'm looking at Sunday and Monday. And I'm not too much happy
Sunday,
about
I just
that.
Looked at Sunday. Sunday ain't better.
They're supposed to be kid trips. I'm supposed to be taking some kids out. No I really don't want to introduce kids to fishing in that kind of conditions. You know, that's just not a good recipe for longevity with a kid.
No, not at all.
See, y'all wonder how I get the things I have to say and the personality that I have, or how, you know, people ask me, and I'm pretty sure that's what they're asking. They say, why are you like this? I think that's what they're actually asking me. It's because my dad never hesitated to introduce me to things in conditions like this.
Well, there's a lot of layers that they're asking about.
Yeah. It's not just that, Caleb.
That's the way I took it.
Yeah. You can take it that way. That's fine. You just, I'm sure that'll help you sleep better at night. This is you know what, catch up on the Bite Me podcast. What do we got, 3 years of this stuff? You can go back and look at the topics and catch up on the Bite Me podcast. Do your honeydews, you'll be good to go, man.
One of the things I was going to add is whenever I'm out there, when I'm fishing by myself and I'm miserable, I usually have some AirPods in my jacket, and I'll put something in my ears to listen to while I'm out there too.
Yeah for sure.
Bite Me podcast music.
The airwaves.
Yeah, anything that isn't like a white zombie or something. I've worked my lure way too fast when I listen to that.
What's going on with you, Caleb, with airwaves and everything else you have going on?
Man, we've got a series going on with a Top Gun fighter pilot and a Navy SEAL that's really interesting. Speaking of why you like this, I've come up with an idea. I've always enjoyed like whoever I'm listening to, paying attention to, getting to know more about them. You know, usually it's like the Beatles or the Eagles or something. It's not necessarily Captain Caleb, but this is what you're getting out of me.
Yeah.
And Scott's gonna be excited about this. I don't think Scott's ever listened to a single Airwaves, but he'll tune into this. I'm going up to my family's place for Thanksgiving next weekend, and I'm gonna do several hours with my sister, and if I can talk my mom into it, and just go through young Caleb's childhood. And I promise you, it's colorful. And when you add my sister into it, it's going to get good. So that's what we're doing there. But airwaves going well. I was in Walmart the other day in Bay City, just wearing street clothes. If you see me out and about, I'm usually wearing like basketball shorts and a t-shirt. That's my go-to.
Mm-hmm.
And, I'm embarrassingly enough, I'm in like the stomach care aisle. I'm lactose intolerant. I can't have anything with milk in it unless I have a pill for it. But I've got a hand of like a box of Ex-Lax in my hand because I don't, the box is the same damn color. So I got to pick them up and look at them closer. And somebody walks up beside me. He's like, "Hey, Captain Gibbs, you make more YouTube videos." And I like calmly set the box of Ex-Lax back down and told him I'm working on it and walked away. You know? But I'm working on the YouTube stuff, man. And when it's windy like this, you know, nobody wants to watch that garbage. So whenever I get some better conditions, we're getting back on that too.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mentioned the Knocker Tail earlier, so I do want to mention what Mike Acrylic texted me. And that is through the holidays, it's not Bite Me 20, it's Bite Me 30. Bite Me 30, 30% off. MyCoastOutdoors.com on all the Knock and Tail lures. ScottNullPhotography.com for Bite Me gear and your fantastic photos. What else is happening with you?
Right now, we've got several orders. I just wanted to put that out there. Yes, we'd have them. We've got the orders. Camille was out of town for quite some time working. She's been, her last road trip was crazy. I mean, she was in Fort Lauderdale. She was in South Padre. She was all over the place. But she's the one that handles all that stuff, as y'all know, because I'm not.
So we got the orders and they'll be.
I'm not capable.
They'll be delivered shortly. They'll be fulfilled shortly.
She does all the paperwork and she hands it to me. I take it to the post office. That's my part of it. But I know she's got several of them sitting there. So if you're waiting on something, it is coming.
We'll get it.
We got the orders and we're going to get it.
And you got your barndominium going.
Yeah, I'm working on the barndominium and go on there. Everybody's always stuck for something for Christmas. You know, you got to buy mom something. You got to buy, you know, your sister something. But go on there and look around. I sell a whole lot of prints this time of year.
Yeah.
Everybody likes a print. Yeah, you know, I've got all kind of bird photos in there.
They're really unique. And they're all yours.
I'll tell you, the craziest thing to me is the number one selling thing on all of the photos. I mean, I've got cool photos in there.
Let me guess. I bet you it's something simple like a cardinal.
Yep.
Cardinals. Is that it?
Cardinals.
Really?
Cardinals are number one.
I'll be dang. I didn't even know that. I just took a stab at it.
And I've got a lot of really.
Bobcats. You got.
Oh, I got like all kind of stuff.
Terrific
man.
Stuff. And I was going to say Blue Jay or Cardinal.
Yeah. Things that took me days and days of sitting in the blind to get a photo of.
Yeah. You're in the mud.
they don't sell. No, the stinking Cardinal. Yeah. And they're cool. I mean, they're some really cool shots of Cardinals. I get them doing some different things, and they're not just a Cardinal perched on a branch and looking at you.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they're
cool looking.
They're interesting. And yeah, people they're love interesting. Them.
I'm gonna cut in here, and I've missed probably about the last 3 minutes of the conversation because I'm talking to the fellow from Alabama. But the Cardinal thing, that is, I found out recently, is the ultimate gift for somebody that has had a loved one pass.
Yep.
My wife, you know, because the folktale goes that if you see a cardinal, that's a loved one visiting you, right? Mm-hmm. And I didn't think it would hit me quite the way it did, but my wife went to that Nutcracker thing, which is counterintuitive for something to buy a gift for your husband at. But she came back with a Christmas tree ornament as a cardinal, and it hit me kind of funny, man.
That's awesome. So,
I think I would really like to have one of Scott's prints with the cardinal in it hanging here in my office.
Like a hint. That sounds like a hint to me.
Sorry, my throat's still bad from last week.
The crazy one I took shaking off all the water.
That's my favorite.
That's your dad.
Y'all should go on Scott's website and see this picture. It is because I get tickled by funny stuff, but it's like this. It's this female cardinal, or I don't know what you call it. I guess, is it still a cardinal? I don't know. It's not a red bird. I guess a cardinal, right?
It's both. They call
and,
them both.
And she's like half hanging off this branch and her feathers are all ruffled and she has got her mouth open and she is yelling at this big red male one. And Scott said he swam up there and shook a bunch of water off and got her wet and just completely pissed her off. Yeah. And the cardinal's sitting there like, what? And she is giving it to him. It's a great picture.
It's like farting under the sheets. That's basically what happened between those cardinals. And on that note, that sounds like
dang, John.
you wish you would have thought of that, right?
There's certain things I worry about you yelling at me for saying after the show, and I feel like that would have been one of them.
Well, that's okay. Not when I say it. All right, boys, that was awesome. Appreciate it. Don't forget to do all that stuff, and Man, I wouldn't go fishing this weekend. Just catch up on the podcast and your honeydews, as we've been talking about. It's going to get better. It's going to get better. It's going to get real good, hopefully after Thanksgiving. But we'll be back before Thanksgiving next week with another podcast for Shane. Shane Bonneau is going to join us next week, correct? So we'll have that. It's going to be a can't miss episode. Until then, if you do go, be safe and catch them up. We'll talk to you next time.